Coming up on today's podcast, we log on to the Museum of Rimmer's Lot, where there's a sticky situation. The Wolf has no visa, and are the Wolves set to pay for play? Area 51's back, converting Union to a league of its own. Daniel has his checkbook out as he breaks the rules to go shopping to unmask the best talent. Will the players' Instagram section stoop to a new low as we slim it down? And finally, why as fixtures are released, starting with a home game at Headingley. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and with no sign of a scientific rugby league COVID document to be found, here's to a scientifically proven podcast. But never mind the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of structure and behaviour, where are my two science podtists? Firstly, he may not be quite Newton, but there's no doubt that any wire statistical fact is drawn to his large brain matter by his gravitational pull. It's Sam Isaac Sankey.
Good morning, Robert. Yes, Sir Isaac Newton, known for gravity, I suppose, but he also devoted much of his life to the study of alchemy, so perhaps he wasn't as clever as people think he was. Anyway, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. I'm very well. The dog celebrated its fifth birthday today, so I gave it a big bone outside.
Did you?
Big one. Big sort of a kangaroo bone. You get kangaroo bones here, so you like that. So gave him a little nibble on that. And also, possibly not Einstein, E equals MC squared, meaning energy equals mass times the speed of light, but more T equals FB. Yes, tackle bags equals fat bastard times the speed of bullshit. It's Dennis Albert Waywell.
All right.
How are you, Dennis? You're a bit hungover today, mate. I saw you were out on the river yesterday doing a little bit of boating.
Yeah, I like a little bit of boating. Thought I'd go up and down the river. But unlike Sam, the study of alchemy or alcohol in your case, Sam. I can say that Albert Einstein never wore socks, so that's something that I've not been wearing for a while. And did you know the anagram of Einstein is 10 elite brains? So I class myself as one of them with my tackle bags.
Do you think there's room for science in rugby league, Mo?
I think there's room for a document in rugby league that talking specifically about science somewhere.
Well, considering my whole tackle bag section is based on science, then absolutely.
Okay, Super League will restart on the 2nd of August with a triple header at Headingley 4 months after coronavirus forced a halt to the season. Hull KR will take on Toronto Wolfpack in the first game, while Saints will play Catalans and Huddersfield face Leeds. The home of Leeds Rhinos will stage the first two rounds of fixtures. They will also be behind closed doors to ensure the safety of the players and staff, as will the triple header at Saints Totally Wicked Stadium on the 15th of August. Good to be back, lads. Are we starting to sort of feel that we're nearly there now, Sam? Are you starting to get itchy feet a bit, want to get back into the rugby league?
Yes, I am. I must say I've become, you're not going to like this, I've become a NRL convert over the last few weeks. I've always enjoyed a bit of that, but in particular to see them getting small crowds back now, 2,500, 3,000 outside your back door. I think there was 2,000 at Manly yesterday, and that's made me look forward more to the restart over here. I know it could be October before we're allowed back in the stadiums, subject to how the dreaded virus reacts, but yeah, if everyone actually does start, that is, Rob. I mean, I think we'll come on to that.
Yeah, we will.
We'll come on to that shortly.
Well, I'm not sort of sure how long our crowds are going to last, because the numbers, unfortunately, are increasing again in Australia. They've kept it pretty much under wraps all the way since this started by quarantining people in the hotels. But unfortunately, a few weeks ago, a few of the security guards started screwing the people that were in lockdown. And this is how it's broken now in Melbourne. And it's now arrived in Sydney. So Melbourne's gone into a six-week lockdown. I don't think we're that far behind. So might be a few more cardboard cutouts start appearing in the next few weeks. Dennis, you keen to come back, start watching the rugby league? I know you've been trying to get into my Sky account again. I could clearly see that the other day.
Well, I mean, that's irrelevant. Yes, I'm obviously looking forward to it coming back. It's quite exciting. I'm still a bit, I don't know how I feel about this season now. I'm almost feeling that I could write it off because there's
going to be so- I said before we recorded tonight that you were to take a positivity pill, didn't I? I said, have a couple of coffees, get yourself upbeat, and you've started with a negativity already. Come on! We're going to get back on this.
Right, okay, I'll try.
Jack and Nori, Jack and Nori. Jack and Nori.
Hello. The story I'm going to tell you this week is called Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
The revised schedule will now contain 22 rounds all up. The leading four teams will be in a playoff and then there'll be the grand final. Following round 14, the schedule will get busier with fewer days between the matches as the league targets a late November conclusion, which would avoid issues over players' contracts, some of which are due to end by the end of the year. Sam, we've got the fixture list now. It's come out. Mm. We can see those what we've got. We've got 15 games left to play. We spoke on the podcast a few weeks ago that looking statistically at the facts back to 2014, you need to win 58% of your games to hit that top four, which means we can only lose six of those games. We need to win nine of those games. The first four games, Hull KR, Huddersfield, Wakefield and Hull FC, they need to be in the bank, don't they? They're the four that we need to win.
Well, I think really it's going to be, if you look at what's happened with Premier League football, it's going to be interesting who comes back off lockdown the fittest. Because under a normal season, normally, exactly as you say, you would want to be beating Hull KR, Huddersfield, Wakefield, and certainly Hull when you're at home to them. So you would expect there's a good chance of four wins. Well, that all depends who comes back the fittest. From the face of it, Hull KR have got serious financial issues, so they're not going to bring their players back till the very last minute. You'd expect we're in earlier. Yep. We should be fitter and a week ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So, and again, you get a bit of confidence in that first couple of games, you could go on quite a run.
Mm. Looking at those 15 games, I mean, most of them are going to be at neutral grounds for Wyatt.
Yes.
But we are going to get a couple of games by the looks of things. They're going to run a few rounds at the Halliwell Jones.
Yes.
So the competition's now a little bit biased towards teams that are going to have that privilege. You know, Saints, Leeds, I don't know whether Wigan will get it now, the fact that they've got issues with, you know, Wigan Athletic going into receivership. But you'd think that we're going to come out of this better than the likes of possibly Hull KR or, I don't know, Wakefield, who are not going to get any games.
At the very least. I mean, it's not been announced yet. It's just those first three rounds been announced. And I know Halliwell Jones or wherever Warrington want to stage some games. So we'll see whether that happens. But if we do, then certainly you'd think having your own home familiar surroundings is going to be beneficial. But again, if you look at both the NRL and if you look at Premier League, the lack of the crowd does seem to negate that home advantage somewhat.
But it must surely help a little bit. If you're training on that HJ pitch or Leeds are training on their Headingley pitch, it must help, surely.
You'd think so. As I say, you've got a familiarity of your own surroundings. Plus, if you're Hull Kingston Rovers, you've got a two-hour drive here, or then you're going to get changed, particularly if there's three games on, you might be changed in porter cabins. You're not going to have the same facilities for warming up.
Look at, if you were looking at the statistics, what would be the average sort of winning percentage for away teams? And then looking at it, you know, in the first sort of 4 weeks of this new setup, is it likely, do you think, that we'll see a decline in the away percentage?
Well, there's only going to be one team at home. Everyone else is going to be playing away.
Neutral venue, effectively, isn't
it? Yeah, that's what I mean. But you've lost the current dynamics of how it works against this new format.
Well, that's why I think we'll gain, because you're going to have a couple of games at the Halliwell Jones and all the others are going to be at neutral venues. I mean, we're playing Hull KR at Headingley. I see that as a banker. Had we been playing Hull KR at Hull KR, as Sam said, you're like, oh, you know, it's 2 hours down the motorway. They're going to get there. We're not always up for it. We're a bit cold the first 20 minutes.
The most important part of this schedule, I've just remembered, is the weather. Because, you know, half the season now is essentially going to appear in, well, like between sort of, what is it, September, October, November? Sorry, October.
Yeah.
You look at October, the weather impact, it's between 6 and 13 degrees, 149 mils of rain, about 90 hours of sun. So basically, you've got daylight saving as well. I think the weather might have the biggest impact on this new schedule.
I think the biggest impact will be that the ball's going to be in play a lot more. I just think they're going to be absolutely stuffed. I know if you go back 20 years ago or whatever, 30 years ago, Warrington played two games a week. You know, all the way through the year, you'd have Floodlit Trophy, you'd have John Player, you'd have Regal Trophy, what it became, Challenge Cup. There was always games going on. You'd have those games over Easter and also over the Christmas period. But these players are different, aren't they? They're precious now. And I think the game has moved on. It's become high impact. I think nowadays,
I think that's more so. I think it's unfair to say the players are precious. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. But I think it's unfair to say that.
Well, Dennis just said it.
Did I?
Yeah, you said
will
it,
once he's
yeah,
edited
yeah.
it. Yeah, once
yeah,
he's
yeah,
edited
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. If you're a prop forward, compared to when we started watching in the 80s, if you're a prop forward, you're conditioned to have a 20-minute high-impact stint than a 20-minute sit-down on the bench. You'll see the worth of a Jack Hughes-type player, a player who can play 80 minutes and can keep going, and suddenly you might see the last 20 minutes of a game, the score really blowing out, where the fittest team just wins.
Is he fit, Jack Hughes? Because there's been no comment at all out of the club about Jack Hughes.
No.
Makes me wonder possibly if he's still not fit.
Well, I think two things here. There's not been a lot of comment out of the club about anything, because until the next week or so, most of the club staff have been on furlough. So really what's been coming out of the club has been what Carl Fitzpatrick has been doing, and the try of the day and rerunning of media. There's been very little actual statement coming out of the club. If we go back to what happened before, when Jack Hughes was injured, he had to have a second operation because he found a slight issue. And he was expected, if the season had gone normally, he was expected to be back by now.
Dr. Sankey. Thank you.
Okay, so come on then, lads. Let's work out where are our nine wins going to come from. Let's go through the fixtures. We've got Hull KR, Huddersfield, Wakefield, Hull FC, Castleford, Catalans, Salford, Wigan, Leeds, Toronto, Catalans again, Salford again, Hull KR again, Huddersfield again, and St Helens. Can you see nine wins out of there, Dennis? Where are your nine wins coming from?
Well, you know, we've just talked about the three factors that will be influencing this season. So we've, you know,
I've just watched Andrew Marr on the television.
Yes.
Right. Tell us where those nine are coming from.
With the three critical conditions of weather, stadium, and
can I stop you there, Prime Minister, and ask you where those nine wins are coming from?
I'm saying we're going to have 10 wins. 10 wins, I'm expecting.
Come on, Sam, you tell us, because he's waffling on like a politician this morning.
Okay, games. I'm on the assumption of where we were beforehand. Games I'm expecting to win: Hull KR, Huddersfield, Wakefield.
Right,
Hull at home.
Three wins on the trot. Yep. Hull.
That's
four. You're saying Hull at home, but we don't know where it is.
Yeah, but the Catalans in this country then at home. Okay. I'm going for Salford home and away, because I think Salford will be struggling. I'm going for Toronto. If we might just get a bye with that, they might not actually play. I'm going for Hull KR again, and I'm going for Huddersfield again. That leaves matches against Wigan, Catalans away, if we go to France, St Helens away, Leeds at home, and Castleford at home. I'm saying they're the harder games. We might slip up in one of the so-called easier games, but we might win one of the harder games.
Right.
10 wins.
Come on then, Rob. Come on, Rob. You tell me your...
Well, I'm not happy with this home and away that Sam's saying. I think we need to just start saying neutral. We will have a couple of games at home. So I will go for a win against Hull KR, because as Sam said, they're destitute, aren't they? They haven't got any money, pretty much. So I can't believe Hull KR are going to be fit. Huddersfield, no. I think we'll lose to Huddersfield. When we looked at the table a few weeks ago, it seemed to me that Huddersfield were the team that could really rise up the table if they got their wins in the bag. And also,
it was based on Caesar, though, wasn't it?
Cesar.
Cesar.
So I think we might get done against Huddersfield. We'll beat Wakefield. Hull are going to have a new coach. I don't know who's in charge at Hull now. Couldn't really give a shit, but we'll beat Hull. Castleford, no. Catalans, Salford, yes. Wigan, no. Leeds, no. Toronto. I think we'll just about scrape 9 out of that list.
I think Catalan are going to be the team most affected by this, because they're the team that will be doing the most travelling. They'll be doing the travelling with masks and sanitisation everywhere.
Not going to the moon, though, are they?
No, but they will be, unless they've got a private plane, which I suppose he might do, but that's money again.
But they've also been back in training for quite a while, Catalans. Catalans have been
back. This is the thing, isn't it, really? Both of you have just sort of jumped straight in there and started reeling off, oh, I think this is going to win. But you're basing it on no sort of information.
No, we are. We're basing it on assumption of who's got the best players. Well, we know that in part anyway, who we think are going to have to be most affected by this. I understand Rob's point about Huddersfield. I understand that point. Mm. But if we see ourselves as a top four team, going on the fact that we've beaten we had an indifferent start, but we beat St Helens, and then we just started to put it together with wins against Castleford and Hull. We've got fit lads, we've got a half-back pairing that are now going to be one of the best in the league. I'm expecting us to perform.
Right, well, let me just put this to you. Science, and if you were Newton, no wonder you were dealing with apples, is that science would tell you that actually we should be looking at the sides and looking at the three critical items of weather, stadium, and six again. Because I favour some of the clubs that have got shitty grounds, because like it's going to be a mud fest.
But they're not going to be a right leveller. They're not playing 15 rounds over 11 stadiums.
If we're not going into localised lockdowns every now and again, if we are, I agree with Rob, we'll stay with just a handful of stadiums. If things go well, then yes, by October, the last 5 or 6 games will be in our own stadiums.
Right. So we're going to take that off the list. That leaves us then these neutral sites and the six again rule. Now, neutral sites we've already discussed a little bit, but let's six again rule. Does it favour certain teams? Like, you know, if you've got bigger props, they may struggle, that mobility.
I think it will favour the teams that have more money, that have got bigger squads.
And the fitter players, because you can rotate better. Correct.
I mean, so how do you identify who those clubs are?
Well, they're easy to see, aren't they? They're Warrington, Wigan, Leeds, and possibly who else have we got? Maybe Catalans, and that's about it.
But at least it should be the bigger teams, because over years we've had the most money to be spent creating a bigger pool of players. Our only issue is we're saying, are we lacking? It's like in the forwards, I think we've got a good core set of 6 or 7 forwards, and all we've been discussing is, are we lacking that one superstar in the forwards that's going to kick holes?
The game's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, but we've got a very good, even people that we've spoke about before, like Lewis Johnson. Is he quite big enough to prop? Is he still going to be at second row? Is he in between? But you can't argue. He's got a great engine on him. He's shown even in the handful of games he's played for us and what he's done all the way through his junior career that he can run around for 80 minutes, and that's what it will favour.
I've just done my science atom here. And what I've worked out is, if you take out those clubs that you mentioned about obviously being the competitive ones, that leaves 10 games to win from all the other clubs. Is that enough?
Yeah, 9's enough. 9 will be enough to get you into
fourth place. So therefore, we need to look at this and see if we lose against any of those other clubs. That will give us our science as to, you know, us actually winning.
I'm looking at 10 games, which I feel we should be winning, but surely we'll lose one or two of those. But against the other teams, like we've already done with St Helens, you do occasionally win a game that you're perhaps not expecting to.
Well, it's going to get even busier, because on the heels of Super League announcing its fixtures, so did the Challenge Cup. The RFL announced that the final will now be played on the 17th of October and that Wembley has been provisionally booked to host the game. Friday's announcement by the government that crowds could be able to return to stadiums in England from October would make Wembley a viable option. The knockout competition will recommence in late August with the sixth round ties to see Wigan play Warrington and Saints against Salford staged at a doubleheader behind closed doors at Huddersfield's John Smith Stadium. Sam, did you remember that we were playing Wigan? I'd completely forgotten about the Challenge Cup and we had that game in the bag.
Yeah, I'd only remembered, to be fair, because 2 or 3 weeks ago, whichever actual date it was, they all merge into one of the weeks at the minute, don't they? On the actual weekend we were going to be playing them, Warrington Wolves put out a video, didn't they, of the last time we played them and beat them. And I think this could be a key match, this. If whichever team loses that, whether it be us or Wigan, will get two weeks where they're not having to double up further down the line, in all probability. It could make a big difference.
Do you think, Dennis, it's worth just giving the Challenge Cup away this year? I mean, we're going to get to Wembley possibly with limited crowds, so it's going to be a shit atmosphere. It's getting in the way of Super League that's got all these backlog of fixtures. If we're going to win Super League, why not we just give the Challenge Cup away?
I think we should finish it because, you know, it's half done with, isn't it, really? And, you know, it's still a competition. I think it'd be good to have a knockout competition. I don't think there's anything to detract from the Challenge Cup. I think there's more to detract from the Super League itself.
Well, one thing that is to detract from it is that the fact that the Championship and League One teams may not be playing, and then we're going to have a lot of games where teams just get buys into the quarterfinals. So it's getting less and less, the Challenge Cup, isn't it?
They could pay them though out of the 1 million left of the fund, couldn't they?
Gee. Well, talking of that, the players have been tested for COVID-19, but it won't be the only change. Other measures, including players training in smaller groups, driving to Padgate already in their kit, not taking showers, no car sharing, and not being given food after sessions. Club doctor Greg Lear said, "This is unlike anything we've ever experienced. Rugby league is a great social sport. The first thing they do in the morning is shake hands and wank each other. Shake hands. There is a lot of contact within the group, but that is out of the window now. We saw all the testing take place, boys. We've seen a lot going on social media. There's been a lot of partying and a lot of people jumping in and out of jacuzzis and everything else together. Do we think they're all going to come back with clean, positive tests?"
Right. Well, I'm going to be very careful here. I've not had a drink today because it's only just 1 o'clock on a Sunday.
Although your wine's disappeared.
I've got your text, Sam, if you want me to read them out.
Go on, you can read it out. I don't mind you reading it out because
it'll take me a month to find it. Carry on.
Okay. The gist of it was, it pisses me off a bit that players will keep to social groups and social bubbles and little groups of five. But then once they leave training, they mix in like I don't know what. And, well, what did we see? We saw one player's party early this week where there was a nice buffet spread across the table. There was a room full of people. Candles were blown out on a cake. So effectively, someone's just spat right across the whole table. And yet, the players are going to stick in... The players are going to stick in little bubbles of five to protect everything. You've got to keep the consistent message. So if they're going to keep to their own little bubble, they've got to do it outside of work as well.
Dennis, is the bubble going to burst?
Quite possibly. I don't know. I think this is just proves that example that Sam has just said. It proves the difficulty of how far this extends. It's beyond the player. And if you focus on the player, it's not so much the player, it's the player and the family, isn't it? So, I think, you know, that message may not be getting out further than the player.
I think the thing to point out, the clip that I'm on about, nothing wrong was going on because it only looked like there was about six people in the house. So that was perfectly allowed in the rules. But if the players are going to keep into these little mini quarantine zones, it has to happen outside of work as well.
Are they in the small mini quarantine zones because one of them could bring something in from outside and then you're limiting it into... it goes across everyone else.
No, you're quite right. I think there's a quote actually you sent us, isn't there? Here we go. players will train in small groups of five for most of the time to limit the numbers that would have to be pulled out if one of them was tested positive.
Yeah, now what do we think about also the other thing they have to do? Players, coaches and the medical team must carry out a questionnaire on an app with 12 key questions. Do you think all of the Warrington players are up to answering 12 questions, Dennis?
Probably. It's strange that an app's got out there without my input, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, but it's only got 12 questions on it. I don't know how that's going to protect anybody. But there you go. What I want to know, though, is what's going to happen if we do get a cluster of players that are obviously tested ill. I wonder what the arrangements are to say that, you know, if you've got a bubble of five that potentially have it and you're tracing it, is that the allowable or the maximum that you would then cancel a game or what?
Well, in Australia, haven't they tested, appreciate the idea of being asymptomatic, but in Australia, don't they take everyone's temperature the day before and the morning of each game? And if you're over a temperature, you just can't play, which then goes back to what Rob was saying earlier. It's going to benefit teams with bigger squads.
Temperature isn't an indicator that you've got the virus. That's the issue.
Aren't you on about 1 in 15,000 people? Oh, sorry, 1 in 1,500 people have had it in the UK, and in Australia we're at 1 in every 55,000 people. Mm. So the chances, the law of averages, someone's going to test positive, you would think, is going to be relatively high when it all.
But with, you know, they've reduced, they've got rid of scrums, so that helps.
Oh yes,
it?
Yeah.
Don't forget.
Yeah. Forget all that section. We got rid of scrums. You're right, Dennis.
Thanks.
Very good. Sam, Warrington are a club still to sign an amended pay structure. Do we think this story is old news and it's been sorted, or are there still problems?
We can only guess, can't we? And
a lot of guessing this week.
It's a lot of guessing.
There is a lot of guessing. But have you noticed that Gareth Carvell's been a lot quieter in this last week or so?
I've never even heard him speak.
I would suspect there's been some movement forward, whether we've actually formally agreed anything or not. But I think if there were still five or six clubs holding out, or lot of groups of players holding out, we would have surely heard something.
Oh, yes, we definitely hear from Super League because they're so good at putting it out there. So you're definitely right there. So
no question. I'm the same question about it.
That's what I'm saying. You'd have heard from the Players' Union, wouldn't you? You'd have heard from the Players' Union.
But it must be stored with a scientific paper in that bloody back room somewhere.
Now, you mentioned before, Sam, the NRL. I watched the game yesterday for the Bulldogs because Luke Thompson was playing. He had a bit of an okay game. He missed a tackle towards the end, led to a try. He got a bit lazy and didn't bend his back. But just looking at that game, one thing that I did come to sort of mind was the fact that Dean Pay has now gone. Dean Pay, the Bulldogs coach, has stepped aside before he was pushed. If you remember back to when Carl Fitzpatrick came to Australia, there was rumour that he interviewed three coaches. And those three coaches, one was Dean Pay, who is now out of a job. He's lasted 57 games at the Bulldogs. The other was Garth Brennan, who was at Penrith, but went up to the Gold Coast. He coached 40 games there. So the only one now left in a job is Steve Price. How many games do you think Steve Price has been at Warrington for now?
Oh, gosh.
It must be about 50, 30, 60 games now.
Well, he beats 50, Garth Brennan on 40.
70.
You heard about Dead Air on radio, Sam. Oh, 70.
Almost 70. Yeah. Almost 70.
You're nearly there, mate. He's done 66. He did 58 games at the Dragons, but he's outlasted Dean Pay and Garth Brennan. Another point I should make also is that I noticed the caretaker coach at the Bulldogs now is Steve Georgialis.
Yes, I noticed that.
Now, he played 10 games for Warrington in 2001 before rupturing his Achilles tendon.
Mm. Mm.
So it's all kind of come round him. Do you remember much about him, mate? I don't really remember. It's that Anderson time, isn't it, when we were signing not the best?
Yeah, I do remember him, but what I was trying to remember yesterday and didn't actually bother to look it up, I was trying to remember whether he'd come across on a European Greek passport rather than an Australian one of them fiddles. Can't quite remember, but I should have looked that up, shouldn't I?
It was another shit game, by the way, wasn't it? There's been some really shocking games in the NRL recently.
This week, there's been a couple of really good finishes. The Souths game was a good finish.
But even though you're saying
it wasn't the best game, was it? And
no,
I was looking forward to that one.
Exactly. You think that, you know, it, tight finishes, etc. But the dropping of the ball and everything.
How many weeks in are we then? Because that might be an indicator of fatigue, hasn't it? Because I watched one as well, and they looked like they couldn't be arsed in the last 10 minutes, if I'm honest. So I reckon that that might be a good indicator for us. So if you look at the schedule, count up to 6 or 7 or wherever we are since the restart, that's going to be the one where we everyone's going to be playing
even
the Claire Balding.
Yeah. Even the Raiders and Roosters, that was a good game, but it wasn't a quality game. It was just an exciting game because it was so close and end to end. Big Nose scored a good try, didn't he? Big Nose scored a good try.
Did he? Oh, yes, he did. Yeah. Well, I pointed this out last week on the podcast. When he starts playing down the middle around the tired forwards, he creates space. And where did he go again? Down the middle of the park, straight through under the sticks.
That's because Hodgson wasn't in his way.
Oh, tell you what. Tell you what. Toronto's season threatened to be curtailed because 7 of their overseas players, including Sonny Bill Williams, are all on visas that limit them to 6 months in the UK. Toronto's owner David Argyle said the club has been in regular dialogue with the Rugby League Football and the Super League over this matter after being told by the Home Office they cannot deal directly with them. But with no progress being made, it's now reached crunch time and jeopardises the club's ability to fill 2020 season. Not looking good, is it, Dennis? I mean, we haven't been very pro-Toronto, to be fair, have we, mate? But another classic example of why it's just not working.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think I'm going to cover this in tackle bags. I've got a solution for it. It's a bit out there, but at the moment, this is just one of those great strategies that isn't working, is it?
You know, they're not even on work visas. You know what? They're on holiday visas. They're on travel visas.
Is that because they're employed in Canada rather than here?
They can't get work visas. I mean, I know they play in England, so I'm not sure how that works with insurance and everything else, but they are just on holiday visas. So
there's been a lot of rumour coming out of Toronto about players being paid late and real financial implications there, hasn't there, over the last couple of weeks. And this could be, this really could be make or break for the Wolfpack. I've been quite pro-Toronto purely because...
You got it wrong.
No, they were made to come up through the leagues, and therefore, if they were invited into the league in the first place, they should be allowed to play.
Surely, with a rugby league team, you're not just looking for today; you're looking for them to be in a competition in 10 years' time. Isn't that what rugby league's about? Should we be. All know the Wolfpack will not exist in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I think the historically. We've seen that things do not last, but you've got one or two exceptions, such as Melbourne, such as Catalan.
Such as Melbourne, who've been given $300 million by News Corp. That Melbourne, sir.
Yeah.
Melbourne, that's really... Have you ever been to Melbourne and seen
how... Yes, I have, actually, yeah.
I've been to Melbourne. I work with people in Melbourne. I can pick up the phone to lots of people I know in Melbourne. Not one person gives a shit about rugby league in Melbourne.
But I would go.
You've got people from Sydney that have moved down to Melbourne that are expats that want to go.
Yeah.
But no one gives a flying fuck about rugby league in Melbourne, and they've lost $300 million.
No, but listen, Rob. I would go the other way. I don't dispute that Toronto is an experiment and that the odds are stacked against them. Fully accept that. But what I don't get, and although you've not used the argument, your vote suggests otherwise, is that people say, oh, we should have a team in Cumbria, or we should let Halifax back in, or we should go Bradford. Those places have had over 100 years to get it right, and they haven't done.
Yeah, but it's not them that's getting it wrong. It's not the population that's getting it wrong, Sam. It's certain individuals that can't run a team. It's the administrational side.
It is the population.
It's the administrational side.
When you've got... Where would a Cumbria team go? Because none of them will visit each other's grounds. They have the chance potentially to come together and they won't. Now, that's not to say they've not got 2,500 to 3,000 people in each of those towns who live and breathe rugby league and deserve better. But you're talking 2,000 or 3,000 people because that's the most that ever go to them games.
Ice hockey. Dwayne Gretzky.
That's the way to go.
Dwayne Gretzky Hall of Museum of Fame. I went there once, got in his suit, and you can, like, you know, be a goalie and try and stop high velocity projectiles coming at you. Shit myself, I did.
Well, we did do a vote. We'll come on to the vote then that Sam's just mentioned. We asked if Toronto Wolfpack were to be replaced in Super League, which team would you like to see? We had four options. We had the Cumbrian Otters, we had Rimmers 13, Elston's Elusives, and Twat Gannets. Yes, that little village up there in Orkney. 34% voted for Twat Gannets, only 6% for Elston. I was thinking this the other day that if there was actually an election now where people that watch Super League could vote for Elston against someone else who was put up against him, I have a funny feeling Robert Elston wouldn't be in power for much longer.
I wrote that down as well. I noticed that people are favouring Rimmer.
The invisible Elston. Man. The invisible man.
Hence why it was Elston's Elusives. Rimmer's 13 got a solid nearly 14%. I think we've shown over this period, Dennis, that if we were in the trenches, we'd want Rimmer next to us rather than Elston, wouldn't we? If we were going over the top. I mean, just for one reason being, he's easier to shoot.
Yeah, you could hide behind him.
I think that is the ultimate question, isn't it? Is who should be at the top of the administration? Like, you know, so.
Cumbrian Otters, nearly 50%, nearly half the audience went for the Cumbrian Otters. I think we just like the name, don't we? Sam came up with a lovely GIF this week, a new logo, which. I think it was a beaver, Sam, but maybe that was another text you sent me. But yeah, I like the Cumbrian Otters. I think it would be nice, and we can place them there in Keswick. Dave Woods can go and walk Cat Bells, and he'll have a lovely afternoon.
I tell you what, it'd be a nice weekend away. Drive up on Friday morning, watch the game Friday night, go for a walk around the countryside Saturday.
Where's that twat?
Home Sunday morning.
Oh, okay.
I reckon if you were playing the Twat Gannets, I reckon the wind would come into play up there. I think you'd be wanting to work. Do you want to kick into the wind in the first half or the second half?
I believe it's very wet in Twat.
It's more of an edit for me. Okay, Tony Adams handing over the RL presidency to Claire Balding. I've got a beautiful framed picture of Claire on my mantelpiece. Balding is taking over. She's going to be in the role for 2 years, which will coincide with the Rugby League World Cup. Beautiful woman, articulate, intelligent, passionate, knowledgeable, everything that you fuckers aren't. I'm a big fan of Claire. Sam, you like Claire Balding?
Yes, I am actually. When she took over the presenting of BBC Rugby
Profs.
League.
Sorry.
Prior to Mark Chapman, who I'm also a big fan of, but it was a step change purely because her enthusiasm for the game came through. She openly admitted she was a novice. She then found out about the game, and her enthusiasm as a fan came through. She is articulate.
Do you know why she did it? Do you know why she ended up doing it?
Is it because BBC lost horse racing to Channel 4 or something?
Steve Ryder was doing the Ryder Cup, and they had no one available.
But yes, from when she did that, she is exactly as you say. She's articulate. She can present because of a day job, and BBC will be showing most of the Rugby League World Cup.
What so is the role? What's the role?
Well, according to Tony,
it's symbolic, isn't it? Really,
according to Tony Adams, you can do as much or as little as you like. He was being interviewed on the Dave Woods podcast with Claire Balding this week. I had a little bit of time on my answer. Got to listen to that as well. Adams, he seems lovely, but he just goes round in circles when he's asked a question. I mean, and he openly admits it. He sort of apologises for sort of just going on and on and on. But the minute, you know, Balding took over the conversation, she's clear and she's distinctive, she's accurate, she's corresponding with the question, she's giving an answer. She's everything we need. Adams seemed to be very much focused on the mental health side of things, which is great because he's had issues there and, you know, he's embraced that and that's where he's sort of pushed towards. But that's not what you have to do. You can do anything you want.
Yeah, but you're right. Adams came into the position. I don't know if you just awarded it or you voted. I don't know, but awarded it in conjunction with the Rugby League state of mind.
Which he'd worked with for launched. 10 years. 10 years he'd worked with them. So, you know, and he's all for that, which is great. And I think Balding will continue that.
So just down on this bit, and obviously I know Rob's no interest in the administration of Rugby League, as he's told us numerous times. What is the role?
Well, you can do as much or as little as you like.
It's like being, but there is actually written. It is actually written down somewhere.
There's no job description. No, there's no job description.
It's a figurehead type role, isn't it? Go on then. Job description away.
It's obviously honorary, as you say, and it's unpaid. It will represent the game with distinction, as Rob has said, I suppose, and add significant profile to the game.
Yes.
So we're going to add significant profile with Claire Balding. Interesting. Have you had a look at what the top 20 influences in the UK for, you know?
No, okay. Well, all right. Let's take some realism. You're right. The best profile we could get would be someone like Beyonce to be the president. But yeah,
It would be if it was 2005, Sam.
Yeah.
If it was 2005, it would be Beyonce.
I'm old, aren't I? Taylor Swift, then. Whoever's top in the top 40 hit parade.
I'll tell you. Yeah. Cash
Come on,
Baker. Dennis.
Come on.
30 million on TikTok. He does comedic stunts and video. But I tell you what, I wouldn't bother going and watch. He's a complete tosser. Desi Perkins. I like her. Good name. Desi Perkins.
Desi a girl. All right.
Yeah, yes. 3.9 million on Instagram. She does lifestyle and beauty.
Hang on, 3.9 is not enough. 3.9 is not
that's
enough.
That's just on Instagram. And she's seen a picture of her dressed as a dominatrix, which I think is exactly what we need to do to kick the ass of the Rugby League administration. So that would be my take for an alternative to Claire Balding. Desi Perkins, have a look. Oh, there you go. Talk about dead air. I now need to fill in, as the other two now are desperately trying to find and Google
how many
Desi
followers
Perkins.
People have got.
All right. Well, I tell you what, Claire Balding on Instagram has got 35,000 followers. Tony Adams has 135,000 followers. Mm. So
3.9 million is a lot.
Claire Balding also admitted that she can't even get her dad to watch rugby league because he's passionate about rugby union. And he won't make the switch. So,
oh, well, that's a great start.
See how we go. Do you think Claire Balding will be making an appearance at the National Rugby League Museum?
That's a good idea.
On time now for our weekly visit to the National Rugby League Museum and the set of Rimmer's Lot. And following last week's break-in, the loss of the John Helm Betamax Yorkshire TV scrum tapes, tensions run high. I guess that's what one has to expect living in the scummy north.
Oh, g'day, Ralph. We got a problem, mate, in the dunny. It seems Robert Elston's left his calling card in there. Looks like a pretty resilient one to shift.
Yes, it's a massive shit, isn't it? I suppose it's what highly paid executives produce nowadays. I think it's a mark of his success.
Do you want me to use the Sean Edwards 5-year weekend contract and try if I can bloody shift it?
No, Stevie. You can't move shit with shit. I'm expecting the plumber around any minute. He said he'd be here in the time it takes Ben Thaler to make a video decision.
Oh, Christ, Ralph. When did you phone him?
Yesterday.
All right, lads. Chris Hill's stop clock and cock plumbing. No shit too big to shift. At your service.
Oh, excellent, you're here. Oh, yes. I was expecting somebody a little younger. You do seem quite out of breath.
I've just run 2 5-metre fucking sets. Back and took to the van. I forgot my scrum cap PPE. You can't be too careful in my game these days.
Yes, but I did think it was for your head, Mr. Hill. Not in this case, as you are wearing it around your bollocks. Well, better late than never, I suppose. Perhaps Stevie could show you the way.
Oh, come this way, big fella. But I think you're going to need more than a special tool to remove this big spineless turd.
Oh, is Mr. Elston still here, then?
Nah, mate, there's Buckley's chance of that. He's just left his calling card.
Bloody hell! I haven't seen anything that big since I removed Steve Broomhead's logbuster from Steve Anderson's ensuite back at Wilderspool in 2002.
So, did you think it will be an expensive job, Mr. Hill? I mean, we don't have that many funds left since Gary Hetherington's ring-fenced our £16 million loan.
Oh, bloody hell. I'll have to tell the club I won't be able to make it later. This is going to take my brute strength to shift this bugger.
Oh, tackle sacks. I knew Mr. Helston was trying to shit on my plans. I don't mean to push you, Mr. Hill. I know you've done a lot already. But what is the financial impact of this shitter?
Oh, look, well, if I charge by the hour, I'll have to remove the scrum packer, put a sideways run in, drop that mouldy ball cock a few times, and look at the state of that fucking rim. That'll be a penalty charge.
Oh, that sounds like it could be quite time-consuming. Would you say it's about an 80-minute job?
Oh, well, let me see. I only work 10-minute stints these days. Oh, so let me think. It'll take me a good 3 days. Let's call it a monkey.
Oh, but, well, that's nowhere to talk about, Stevie. Anyway, Chrissy, we don't want to see you out of pocket, especially when this is your supplementary income.
No, don't be daft, mucker. Since Fitzy cut me pay, I make more money nowadays doing this bollocks than rugby league.
Oh, yes. Just how we like it.
Well, I tell you what, it's heating up, isn't it, lads? I'm itching for episode 4, which I haven't received the script for yet, Dennis, by the way. Sam, you enjoying it? You enjoy that one? Was that the best one so far, mate?
At least it was some sort of story arc through this week's 4 minutes. I'll give you that. I think that was okay.
How dare you?
I like that.
Listen to him. Who do you think he is? Michael Gray?
Yeah. And I'm still wondering, have you had a copyright letter? Have you had a copyright letter from Victoria Woods Estate?
She's dead.
Yet?
She's dead, Sam, so it doesn't matter anymore.
Well, actually, you know, we will be. I've actually started to stalk the Netflix person to get this published. So
we had anyone come back on it yet, Dennis, at all? Because no.
Fair enough. Area 51.
Did Phil Forge steal Bob Eccles' car? Or is that just a myth? Because I steal fucking cars all the time.
Paul Cullen, save the club. Fake news. Salford lost the last 11 games.
Steve Anderson and the bad coach. Old wives' tale. He was ahead of his time.
100 yards a success. Oh, what a storytelling. He lost to Hull 40 points to 6.
Bob Bears, the ghost of all Wilderspool Town. It's just a fable.
In 2019, Steve Price only had a 20% winning margin over the second half of the season, and that's no joke. Not that I know much about rugby league, although I did go and watch Fulham once.
The first player I can find that played for Warrington was in 1903. It was George Thomas. He represented Newport. He left Newport to join Warrington. He played 385 games for the Wire, and he also played for Great Britain. He also played at number 8 for Wire in their 10-3 win over the Touring Kangaroos at Wilderspool in 1908. George died at the Battle of the Somme on the 3rd of July 1916 while serving for the South Lancashire Regiment. He was only 35 years old. Puts it into perspective a little bit, doesn't it? We're all, you know, worried about playing 2 games a week, and we've got a bloke going off to fight in the First World War and losing his life. I mean, it's a different world back then.
You are really an advocate of playing 2 games a week then, aren't you? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I am, or having Rimmer next to me in the trenches and going over the top, one of the two. I think that's the only way to do it. Around about that time, it is I just couldn't comprehend how many rugby league players went to war and lost their lives. There was just dozens and dozens.
I think just to be somber for a moment, Rob, you're right. It's not just rugby league players, is it? It's when you start looking at the sheer number of young men who went away in that period and just never came back.
Yeah.
And to think how there would have been communities decimated at that time, lost fathers, sons, brothers, and just decimated. And if you bring it right the way to now, when we're talking about, do you play two games a week or not? Do you take a 10 or 15, 20% pay cut or not? Really does bring it home to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I'll read a few more out and we'll sort of move through the timeline. 1904, Francis John Sugars, Wales, 212 games for Warrington. 1906, John Jenkins, Wales scrum half, he plays 99 games for Warrington. 1908, Evan Watkins, he's a Welsh winger. 1908, William Dowell, he's a dual international. 1908, Billy O'Neill. 1910, William Johnson. I mean, the whole bloody team's Welsh when you go back that far. 1927, Jesse Meredith, he plays 113 games for Warrington. In 1927, Di Davis, the Welsh scrum half, plays for Warrington.
No steadier type with that name, is there?
No, it's just...
He appears three times over 50 years.
1935, Freddie French, he's our first New Zealander, but he only plays one game at fullback. So I'm not sure what happened there.
I can't help listening to these lists and thinking, has he thrown a few daft ones in here? Because I've been looking at it.
What's that show that David Mitchell does on Radio 4? Where you know,
the
usual,
telling the usual truth.
Yeah. Anyone want to bing in yet? No, okay. 1940, 47 games for Staniel Powell. He plays just 27 games over 7 years. And what you really notice about the contracts, once the war kicks in between sort of 39 and 46, so many players are kept on contract. They play very few games, but
Didn't Brian Bevin sign in 1939 and then play just two or three games until after the war or something like
that? No, Bevin signs in 1945 as the war ends, as also does Jerry Helm. They're the two main signings as the war
finished. I thought he signed when the boat docked before the war,
I think he played for Leeds, didn't he? He played one game for Leeds. Leeds didn't like him. He came to Warrington. He did nothing at Warrington during that game. That actual game he plays at Warrington before he signs. He does nothing for 79 minutes of the game. And in the very last minute, he goes the length of the field. And that's the only reason Warrington signed him. We also signed Harry Bath. He's a second row forward from Australia. He signs in 1948. But we're not done because we've still got the Welsh coming in. In 1947, Bryn Davis, a loose forward, signs. And then a character that does sign in 1948, and he has played rugby league at other clubs, I think Wigan and Huddersfield he's played, is Roy Francis. He plays 37 games on the wing for Warrington. He went on to be the first black British professional coach in any sport. He coached his way to three championships and a Challenge Cup. There is talk that the Roy Francis should have a trophy named after him, which only goes to say that, you know, we've sort of missed him. I mean, I missed him putting this together. Do we know anything about him, lads? Do you know anything about Roy Francis?
No, and yet we should do, shouldn't we? We should, he should be celebrated.
One thing I should say, Rob, is I must compliment you on the fact that, you know, you've moved on from giving us a list of Barbie buses and stuff to giving us much more informative.
Yes. I've done a lot. Well, the other reason I think Roy Francis deserves a trophy named after him, because, of course, between 1980 and 1984, he was in charge of Cracker Jack. He presented Cracker Jack with catchphrases like, I'll crush a grape.
No.
Jump it. What?
Different Francis.
You have to go and ruin it, don't you? You did a good bit, and now you're just going, you're talking shit again.
Oh, fuck. This is Wikipedia for you. This is what happens on Wikipedia. It's completely undermined the section now. Don't feel like carrying up.
Talking of which, I've just looked up Brian Bevin. And I was completely wrong, but I know where I got it from. He signed and then he finished off his Navy service for Australia while we kept the contract open.
This podcast getting longer with your caveats. Get your bloody research done.
Exactly. Yeah, he does a lot of research, doesn't he, during the podcast now, Dennis? Have you noticed that? That's when he goes to
It's because my memory's no longer any good. I used to rely on my memory, and now it's not good enough. I have to write it down.
Do you think, like, just thinking about this, if Bevan was in the Navy, do you think he had a girl in every town? And we could track back through where the boat stopped, look for some DNA in these ports, and find ourselves a new winger.
Could do. I like that idea. So who's volunteering for that one?
1950, Jerry Lowe signs. Now, this is a bit of a difference in a trend now. This is the first time we start signing English rugby union players. But they don't come from the likes of Bath or the Harlequins. They come from Warrington Rugby Union. Jerry Lowe signs from Warrington Rugby Union. He plays 129 games for the Wire. Laurie Gilfeder, again from Warrington Rugby Union. He plays 283 games for Wire. And then we're back into the Welsh. Ray Price, 113 games for the Wire. He signs in 1953. 1955, all of a sudden, we have a connection with Ireland. Tommy McKinney signs, and he plays 64 games at hooker for Warrington. He also brings over Robin Thompson from Ireland, playing 50 games for Warrington before his career comes to an end pretty early at the age of 25 due to an injury. There's then a bit of a discrepancy on who Ivor Phillips is. This is a game where we get a bit let down. We think he comes from St. Ives, Cornwall.
And he's obviously got Welsh heritage, Ivor Phillips.
Everybody frantically looking for this bullshit now.
1961, Merv Hicks signs from Wales, 34 games to the Wire. Charlie Winslade for Wales, 159 games at prop for Warrington. And it carries on all the way through into the 70s. There's more and more Welsh rugby union players being signed. A big one, you might remember we've mentioned this lad on the podcast before, Dennis Curling from Wales. He appears on the wing for Warrington 132 times. And then the following year, and this is where my memory starts to kick in with why I'm born in 71. Between 72 and 80, Mike Nicholas plays for us. He signs and he plays 152 games for the Wire. What I remember more about Nicholas than anything else is him serving petrol. He owned the petrol station as you went towards Warrington Sports Club in Stockton Heath. And Dad would always get petrol from there just so that Mike Nicholas could fill the car up. And I seem to remember Nicholas chewing on gum, always being a bit tanned, and I was petrified of him sitting in the back seat watching him fill up the car.
Now, I thought the anecdote was going to be on the first tee at Lynn. Let's not mention that.
He's a larger-than-life character, though, Mike. And I wonder how he's been doing over the last 6 months, because prior to lockdown, he could regularly be seen around the bars of Stockton Heath holding court and telling stories.
Yeah, great player. He brings with him Clive Jones as well from the same club in 1972. And then my hero, I had a few sort of sporting heroes growing up. One of them was Jimmy Connors. Jimmy Connors was one of them. Red Rum was another. But
Jimmy Connors is why he started playing tennis left-handed.
Possibly. But I had his Wilson T2000 racket. Jimmy Connors' racket. But in 1973, John Bevan signs. He plays a staggering 332 games for Wire. He scores 201 tries. He represents Wales at Rugby Union, the British Lions and the Barbarians. We've played a few sound bites of that try he scores for the Barbarians. But then he goes on and plays for Wales and Great Britain as well.
But I'm not sure he gets the credit he deserves, really. And possibly because of his surname. You talk about a Bevan and very few people think of John. They just think of Brian. And it's a shame, really, because his record is so impressive.
I remember him having great sideburns. I remember that about him. I remember him scoring tries and putting his fist in the air when he'd score. But I also remember his defence being superb as well. I think in a John Player game, I remember a centre running at John Bevan and sort of just turning around and running away from him. And everyone in the crowd just laughed because it was clear he just didn't want to be tackled by John Bevan. We carry on. We then have another rugby union player from England that comes in 1979 in Neil Courtney. He's a huge prop. He plays 133 games for Warrington. And then we're down the road again back at Warrington Rugby Union because we signed Rick Thackeray in 1980. He tallies up 133 games for Warrington. One thing I should mention at this time as well is that around about the 80s, I spent a lot of time watching A-team games with my dad on a Friday night. And there was always two or three names on the team sheet every week. There were A and others that all came from rugby union and couldn't give their name on the team sheet. And it would be week after week after week, the team sheet would be littered with A and others.
Just to add to that, I don't know if you mentioned them because I was reading it, but there was Owen Bevan and Di Bevan that also played for Warrington. Yeah. Di Bevan played in 1920 and Owen Bevan in 1951.
Yeah, we're just littered with rugby union converts that came over. The next great one I remember is in 1981, we signed Phil Ford. He plays 112 games for Warrington. He scores 57 tries. We sold him to Wigan for a record fee at the time of £40,000. What I remember more about Phil Ford, apart from him nicking Bob Eccles' car, was was that try he scores in the 1988 Great Britain Tour of Australia. I think it's commentators Darrell Eastlake, God rest his soul, and he steps into the line and scores an absolutely magnificent try.
Gregory spins it out for Ward. He gets it back for Gregory. Gregory straightens the attack up. If he's got some runners, he has in Hume. Ball loose. Gregory there to snap on it. He's darting around. He's elusive, this little man. Loose pass back. It comes on to Ford. He's a stepper forward. Winds up Ford. He's going to get there. Oh, they win again. Oh, that's a good play there that time from Ford. He can step this ball, I'll tell you.
In that game, and I think it's that try that we've just played, Andy Gregory touches the ball a couple of times. So does David Hume. The opposing scrum half and standoff in that game is Peter Stirling and Wally Lewis. Andy Gregory and David Hume play Lewis and Stirling off the park that day. They gave them a footballing lesson and it should never be forgotten. In 1987, David Lyon signs. He plays 147 games at fullback. I didn't remember this, Sam, but he finishes his career at Oral. He plays 52 games.
Yeah, I remember David Lyon. I remember David Lyon very well. A long, rangy stride. Once he got going, he just flew along the pitch.
He was one of the players at the time that also had a career, didn't he, outside rugby league. He was qualified. I can't remember what he was qualified at, but he was sort of one of the ones that almost didn't play rugby league because he was making more money out of the sport.
And in a way, that perhaps, maybe I'm doing him a disservice here, I thought David Lang was a good player, but never quite the top player. And perhaps that was it. Perhaps because he had a different career, he was never quite, his life didn't quite depend on it, maybe. Yeah. Maybe he was too intelligent to get bashed up all the time.
One player I did miss out was in 1984. I don't know if anyone remembers this guy, Steve Diamond. He plays 100 games for Wakefield. He plays 100 games for Fulham. And then Reg Bowden signs him and he plays just 5 games at fullback for Warrington. And then the ones I think we all kind of start remembering. Is in 1990, we sign a trio of internationals, all from Wales, in Kevin Ellis, who goes on and plays 123 games for Wire. He scores 35 tries. Alan Bateman, 142 games for Warrington with 52 tries, and also Roland Phillips with 50 appearances at prop. I also think, you mentioned before, Bateman doesn't quite get the recognition he deserves because three years later we signed Jonathan Davis. Yeah. If anyone wants to see how to tackle round the legs, watch a video of Alan Bateman. He was the best tackler when it came to tackling round the legs, a superb tackler.
Those were the three union imports that made the biggest impact coming straight. Davis, wonderful player, outstanding, but he was already a rugby league player and he'd already played at Widnes for 4, 5, 6 seasons. But those three, I was actually surprised Roland Phillips had only played 50 games. But Ellis and Bateman and Phillips together, they really added to the team at that period of time.
Yeah. They did. I think Bateman hit the ground running first. Ellis took only a couple more weeks, but they were in the team pretty quickly and off and running. It was Phillips that struggled a bit because it was that different for a prop, I think, to come over.
It was, but he was a type. His sheer size. Once he got up to the fitness level of running back 10 meters or 5 meters, running back and going again in the 6 tackles, he was able literally to stand in the tackle with 3 or 4 men hanging off him because he was that big of a unit and he just got his arm out to present the offload.
Yeah. He was strong. Then 1993, Jonathan Davis signs. He plays 66 games for Warrington, scores 43 tries. And then one that I'd forgotten, I didn't realise he'd actually played for Warrington. I don't know why this one went in my memory. And that was Mark Jones, the big sort of lump of a lad that came. And he was a good prop in rugby union. He came from Hull. He played 38 games for Wire. The one thing I do remember about Mark Jones with him was him playing for Hull, and he sparked Gary Tees out right in front of us. He didn't half slap Gary Tees. Gary Tees got up, played the ball, sort of looked at Mark Jones and said, right, do you want some? And Mark Jones clouted him one, and Tees went to the ground. Remember that? 1995, Salisi Finau, the Tongan. He came from the Canberra Raiders. He'd only played a handful of games there. He'd also represented Tonga in Rugby League World Cup in 95. And then he signs for Wire on a two-year contract. He then moves to Union, playing 6 years at Llanelli Scarlets, also winning a cap for Tongan Rugby Union. Do you remember much about him? I remember him absolutely putting someone in half with a shoulder challenge.
Well, actually, you're about to speak about someone else as well. And I remember the pair of them coming over and the excitement that these two lads were going to bring. But they weren't quite up to the level that they would be.
The one that was 1995, Matiaki Maffi signs from Tongan Rugby Union. He played 23 games on the wing for Wire. He participated for Tonga at the age of 19 at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics in the 2000 metres. He came fifth in his heat. I remember watching him. I don't think Dennis was there, but we were at Dennis's house in Leeds for the weekend, and Matiaki Maffi got the ball from about 30 yards out, and he sprints into the corner and scores an amazing try. And that was about the last thing he ever did. In his first game, he looked superb. Never really came on after that.
No, and that's what I remember really about these two lads after them representing Tonga. And we thought, bloody hell, we've got an Olympic sprinter here. He's going to be wonderful. Well, on the occasions that he caught the ball and was given a bit of space, he was. But the rest of his game didn't live up to it, did it?
No, didn't. 2004, one player's game that was very good, had a terrific scoring rate, was Henry Fiafili, the Samoan. He played 97 games for the Wire and he scored 73 tries. Again, he went on to rugby union. He played for Barits in 2007. And I think he went to a few other clubs as well. Yeah. A great try scorer, wasn't he? When in 2004, were you allowed to knock the corner flag over?
No.
Because
he'd have scored even more. He would have scored even more. A really nice, polite young gentleman was Henry. I sat next to him on a flight to Perpignan once.
Mile High Club.
Perpignan.
Yeah. No. We didn't. We didn't take it any further than the pleasantries in the seats.
I know what's going to be on the artwork this week.
Christ. 2009, Brian Carney signs for Warrington. He only plays four games for Wire. I thought he played more than that. He came from Gaelic football.
He broke his, I think it was his arm he broke more or less straight away. He'd only signed for a season and then he took up a position as player welfare.
And then the last ones really were in 2010. We get a little bit more spread out now when it comes to Union boys. And these didn't really come from Union, although they had played Union. That was the brothers Rhys and Ben Evans from Wales. They were noticed whilst representing their secondary school in the National Schools Rugby League final. Although both had been brought up in the area dominated by Rugby Union, and they did play Rugby League as well. And they were accepted on a scholarship by Warrington. They never both either of them quite came to fruition, did they? They never became world beaters like Bateman and Davies.
No, not world beaters. I think we had, when we started this podcast, we had a little bit of a downer on Rhys Evans. And again, that wasn't really, I think we sometimes forget, he was a decent player, still is. He's a decent player. But when you saw those first bits of promise from him as a young kid, he was lightning fast, taking people on the outside handoff. And that never came through in his game as he developed. He was a lot more safety first, wasn't he? And a bit. Let's be fair. He played for several years for Warrington. He never let us down. I think that would be the way to say it.
And then the last one in 2019, Luther Burrell. He signs from Northampton Shark. He played 15 times for England Rugby Union, and he scored four tries. So that's the full list, boys. That's it. Mainly dominated, well, predominantly dominated by Welsh rugby union recruits. Now, last time out, Daniel focused on why players that have packed their bags to other clubs and which one he'd like to see return. So this week, rather than a player he'd like to see come back, here's Daniel on which player currently playing in Super League he'd most like Warrington to sign.
I think an important point to make first of all is that the player I would most like to see at Warrington isn't necessarily the same thing as asking me who the best player in the league is. So the ideal signing might not be the best player in the league, because the best player in the league for me, by a distance actually, is Johnny Lomax at St Helens. However, we don't really need a halfback at the minute, particularly one who's in the prime of his career, when we have two who are also in their prime in Austin and Widdop. If we were to sign a halfback, I'd love someone like Jake Truman at Castleford, because I think he would be an absolutely outstanding piece of business. I think he's only 21 and he's already one of the best halves in the league, I think. Unbelievably talented for his age. And so if Warrington were to go in for a halfback, Jake Truman I think would be a brilliant signing. But I've actually looked at three positions that I think we could be doing a little bit better in. So I'll start on the wing. Now, I like Tom Lynham a lot and I like Josh Charnley a lot. They're both good finishers and they both do a lot of the dirty work. But I just think they're both a bit too samey. We don't really have a bit of world-class cutting edge on that wing like we did when Joel Monaghan was here. So I've gone for Tommy Makinson. So Makinson, for me, is the best winger in Super League. He's probably one of the best wingers in the world. He's got everything. He's got searing pace. He's got outstanding finishing ability. He gets through the dirty work. Brilliant, brilliant winger. Makinson would be an absolutely fantastic signing for Warrington. Then I think thought about the props. Again, Hill and Cooper. I've said bits on Hill before. To his credit, I think he's a leader. I think he's a hard working player. But is he the top class prop that he was a couple of years ago? No, I don't think so. And Cooper, very, very good as well. I think Cooper's a top standard prop, but we're just missing a little bit more in that department. So I've gone for Alex Walmsley. Now, this would have been Luke Thompson a couple of weeks ago, but after he's moved to the NRL, I believe that Walmsley is the best prop in Super League now. Even after his horrendous injury a couple of years ago, he was fantastic for St Helens last year. Liam Watts was pretty close at Castleford. I really like Liam Watts as well. Moving on from prop to centre, and I've picked three that I'm a massive fan of, all three. Oliver Gildart, Mark Percival and Bill Tupu. Now, I think centre is probably Warrington's main area of weakness at the minute, which will be greatly strengthened by the arrival of Inglis, we hope, next season. But for now, any of those three would massively improve things at centre. Gildart been fantastic for Wigan for a number of years. Percival, arguably the best centre in the last decade in Super League. And Tupu, I think, is quite underrated at Wakefield, but does a really, really good job. And he can cover on the wing as well. All three would offer something a little bit different to what we've currently got in that department. But sticking with the centre, my dream signing from any Super League club right now will be Jake Connor. I love players with a bit of flair, a bit of unpredictability, players who can do something a little bit magic. One of my favourite ever Super League players was Rangi Chase, that you never knew what you were going to get from him, but he could always pop up with a moment of magic that would just tear the opposition defence to bits. And I think Connor, on his day, is the best centre in Super League. His talent, for me, is unquestionable. There has been questions over his attitude and his work ethic, but I think if those could be sorted out, for me, he could be a world beater, because his talent and his ability, frightening. He would also bring that bit of bite as well, because, you know, there's a bit of needle with Connor, which I don't think is such a bad thing. I think it's something that perhaps we've been missing, particularly recently. So that's why, for me, Jake Connor is probably my number one signing from anybody in Super League.
Interesting this. I like what Daniel's about here.
It's cut of his juice.
With three of them. There's one I don't like. I don't think Jake Connor will ever amount to what he could be. I've seen players like this before. I agree with Daniel, he's brilliant at times, but he also has brain farts at times, and I don't see that he's ever going to be any different. And given Inglis is coming, I'm not interested in Connor. Makinson, on the other hand, Yeah, outstanding. Although, you know, when you look at it last year, across a whole year, statistically, he's only just a little bit better than Josh Charnley. It's only really his tries that make a difference, but clean breaks, 36 from Makinson, 35 from Charnley. They're both making 8 metres a carry. You know, it's only the number of tries. And, yeah, I'd have Walmsley at the club, but I'd rather have Liam Watts.
Well, we put the Twitter vote out there. We had 160 votes on this. It got a good response. A was Jake Connor, B was Alex Walmsley, C was Jake Truman, and D was Tommy Makinson. Jake Truman only got 13% of the vote. Tommy Makinson didn't do much better. He's 17. Jake Connor gets 21. But there's a clear winner. Alex Walmsley gets 49%. He nearly gets half the votes. We've talked about this endlessly, haven't we, that it's a prop that we're after. I'll just read some of the comments as well. Primrose Blue, he wrote, Truman because of his potential, all excellent players, particularly like Connor, but we all know his baggage, which kind of is where you're coming from, Sam. Yeah. Mikey Wire, he writes, Mark Percival, that's who he wants to see. Daniel Murphy, sort of going down the same path as Alex Walmsley, desperately need a forward to beef up the pack. Infamous underscore Werve. Not exactly a feast of luxury there, is it? Alex Walmsley, question mark. We may as well have Dr. Savback. Dre Savback, I think that's who he's after. Wazza, Liam Watts for me. There's none on that list are any better than we currently have. Gareth, thinking about it, I'd have Liam Watts. He's an upgrade on Hill and he gives 100% every match. Now, we should point out at this stage that looking through our analytics, Gareth voted twice, and we've now put an independent inquiry into this, and we are going to speak to him about that. And the final one comes from some young lad called Dennis Waywell, who wrote, just what we need, another pointless, crappy poll. Cannot we have a vote on Barbie's vehicles? I mean, another bad day, were you, Dennis? Another bad day?
Somebody must be using my Twitter handle. I don't recall doing that. That's something...
Were you drunk?
Well, let's be honest. I mean, we it's getting very hard now, this podcast, isn't it, eh? We've been sat
here for only a couple of weeks to go.
Not as hard as when
we spent an hour going through rugby union shite, and now we've got to this bloody pointless bloody thing. I mean, we can keep riffing on about how many, you know, different people we want. I think we need a prop, and we should be looking at that, and that's it. I think Daniel missed a point there. Jake O'Connor, too emotional.
You're saying it's getting hard, this podcast, but it's nowhere near as hard as when Sam sat next to Henry Firefeely on that flight. I bet he couldn't even get the tray down.
That's bad, yeah. Didn't even have a mask on.
On that same flight, Lee Braze was across the aisle, and my son, who was only 6 at the time...
Got felt up by
him. We sat on the aisle seat, directly opposite Lee Braze, and Braze says to him, hello, what's your name? And he says, my name's Connor. And he says, are you going to the rugby, Connor? And Connor says, yeah, we're going to the rugby. He says, what's your name? And he says, my name's Lee. Are you going to the rugby, Lee? Well, the whole play, we're in fits.
It's not really Ronnie Corbett, is it, Sam?
It's not really Ronnie Corbett. Yeah. The producer
I thought it was just
said...
going to be as long as Ronnie Corbett for a second. Okay, during our previous episode, we all caught a glimpse of Dennis's snatch. Yes, with his pay-as-you-play incentive salary structure idea entitled Super League Numerical App Cash Handler. So as Young crosses his legs again, what basic instinct does our flirtatious rugby league guru have for us now? Avert your gaze, everyone. It's time for...
Tackle Bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
So, as Rob recovers from his snatch, I'll move on quickly this week and look at what we looked at last week, which was the snatch, looking mainly at the pay structure and making it transparent for the player's performance during a match. Using the WWBBS performance-related pay structure, I devised a method where players can earn their pay according to the key performance indicators during the game, taking the criteria from categories like assists, tackles, meters, gains, and then apportioning a particular amount of pay for each.
So you're keeping it quick, like you said.
Pardon?
I said you're keeping it really quick, like you said. Yeah, yeah.
No. I'm just sort of moving through. I'm trying to bring people back round from the hour of rugby union statistics. On top of this, there would be a payment cash handling system, Super League numerical app technical cash handler system, which would basically give all the season ticket holders a chance to vote for their best players, and they'd be paid accordingly on a scale. So as you can imagine, we had a superb response. 91% agreed. Yes, this one was from Liam Neeson's hand double. So that's a good one. Can this be extended to the coaching staff? Steve Price could get paid on the number of times a team show evidence of resilience, playing as a players group, and getting filthy in their DNA. So that's 7% no. Comment from Angry Pant saying, I'm not sure it's fair to pay a player from the likes of the bloater that sits next to me in the stand. Apart from his foul mouth and outdated opinions, his fat bastard fingers won't be able to select the options on the app. So that could be done with something else. I don't know. 2%. Jim Anal Canal Trip wrote, I Googled snatch payment system. Is yours the one with the big cock in it?
Oh, dear.
So I'd like to address the Super League HQ. Here, I'd like to build a rugby league village with the centrepiece of the construction being a rugby league superdome. The complex, known as the Super League Local Utility Township, would be an area where all the amenities necessary to accommodate 5 teams from all areas of the world. It would consist of a state-of-the-art Superdrome, of course, housing a 5G pitch, a complex training facility, surrounded by shops, cinemas, McDonald's, hairdressers, Nando's and all that type of shit, along with schools, colleges, bus service, libraries, swimming pools, and various other infrastructure. More importantly, this is going to be designated a free zone by the government, getting around the issue of visas. So we'll set up an independent consulate led by an ambassador abiding to the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, which basically makes it a free zone. And the teams from other territories can come into the township, live there, work there without the necessary need to get visas. I've submitted some plans. There's 3 plans. We're going to build this on Saddleworth Moor because we need quite a big area. Handily located from a geographical point of view, I think you could all agree. We've got 3 different cost levels because it is quite expensive. We've got option 1, which is a Superdrome, about 256 million we need for that. Option 2, basically just 2 smaller domes, about 128 million, and then option 3, which is the cheap economy version, which is basically, I call nutcrackers. It's just basically an egg-shaped suitcase that you put your player in, send him to where he's got to go, leave him in a warehouse, and then just drag him out when you need him. So all visa things considered. So if you think that's a great idea, write in, and on next year's tackle bags, because we're obviously running a bit low here on tackle bags, so I need some big fans.
And like Dennis,
Gareth Monkey out there.
Will Rugby Union be able to use this Superdome as...
If they're willing to put up some of the money, I know we've only got...
Because I've done a section on that. I've got contacts now in the historic rugby union fraternity.
How could we fund it? I like the idea on Saddleworth Moor, but
yes.
we already own Odsall, so could we not just take over part of Bradford and just put a big wall...
You're against there? Bradford, Sankey. You were kicking off before about Bradford. You didn't want him in the competition.
Yeah.
That's not what I said.
Had a chance.
I don't like Bradford.
So we'll have Saddleworth Marauders or something like that. It could be the home team. But yeah, I think that's a great idea. 16 million has already been used, I would have had there, for the architectural plans.
Yeah.
So,
are you going to have someone paint the top of the dome? Sistine Chapel. Are we going to have someone some local artist that I was thinking maybe David Hockney, series of sort of naked pictures of Sam and Henry Fifeely in a pool or something.
That'd be on a plane. Yeah, that'd be flying over on the plane.
Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plug those dots from those wire clots. On the results are in. It's Joel Philbin and his insatiable appetite.
Yes, hard to beat our Instagram episode 23 in-depth analysis of Barbie's static caravans. But this time out, rather than attaching a mobile home to the podcast tow bar, we'll trail a wheelie bin in the form of Philbin.
This week, we've seen Joe Philbin, I'll get it right in a minute, for 2 days he posted various pictures amounting to about 48,000 calories. Now, having looked at this on one particular day, he Instagrammed some pictures. I've worked out how many calories he actually used that day. Ooh. Or would have used that day. Ooh. If he would have had them. Yeah. Tikka masala is about 800 calories. He posted a picture of some Indian restaurant. Yeah. If he was to eat a naan, rice, and a bhaji, that would come to about 2,280 calories. He also,
I like that yeah. Because you didn't say naan bread, because naan bread is basically bread. So I like that.
Thank you. Always do the research. Then he posted a picture of a cream puff. And that was about 335 calories. So altogether, he was in one day, he was posting a calorific value of 2,615 calories, which using the burn average per game of 800 calories was 3.2 games worth of food. Now, what I want to ask is, has he got the power?
Has he? I don't know. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Oh, right. I don't know. Has he? Has he got the power, Sam?
Oh, we keep going over these props. You know,
he's certainly got the calories, whether he's got the power or
he's
not.
He's very hungry, isn't he? I did notice he visited Benny Westwood's Food Emporium, and it became clear that Benny has spelt steak baguette Friday special incorrectly. He'd missed out the U, unfortunately. I looked into a few diets that Joe might want to go into. I've got three diets for you. Del Hall from the state of Ohio, USA, made headlines in 2019 when he went on a beer-only diet. He lost 44 pounds in 46 days drinking nothing.
Is he still alive?
No, he passed away in 2020. Okay. Right. Now, also, Barbie caused outrage.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, dear.
With her Slumber Party Barbie book in 1965, entitled How to Lose Weight. Barbie had simply written inside the book in big fluorescent letters, "Don't eat." That was all it said. She also, in 1974, she had a bathroom suite which included a set of scales that were permanently fixed to 110 pounds, 7 stone, 12 pounds, which coincidentally is the same weight as a Saturday morning shit following eating a Benny Westwood steak baguette Friday night special. And the last one, and I think we all are a bit of a fan of this guy, he was a vocal guru from Greece, and that was Demis Roussos. He struggled with his weight. In 1980, he weighed 23 stone. He then began a diet in which he lost 8 stone in 10 months, eating nothing but chicken and drinking coffee. In 82, he co-authored a book, A Question of Weight. So I think he was a good one. But in 85, you might remember this, Roussos was among a passenger jet that was hijacked. It was a TWA flight, 487 from Athens to Rome. It was hijacked by the Hezbollah. He was released with 4 other Greeks after 5 days on board the aircraft. But he spent his 39th birthday on the plane, and he thanked these captors of the Hezbollah at the press conference because they gave him a birthday cake. A lovely touch, which only goes to show that in a hostage situation, fat bastards will still continue to eat cake. So
we've got to a point where we're promoting Hezbollah.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebudged it. Yes, wait for it. It's time for... It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo.
Friends reunite! Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole that turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
Okay, it's time for Lockdown Letters. I've had a few in this week. A few complaints to start with. We've had one in, he's anonymous. He doesn't actually give his name, but he says, Andrew Johns was asked by Trent Barrett at the Bulldogs which five players he'd like to see the Bulldogs target, and one of them was Darryl Clark. We got a whole torrent of abuse saying that it's our fault. Robert Lawson, Johns has only gone and done this because you said last week on the podcast, in particular Sam Sankey, that Johns was shit at the wire. Your fault. So, have you got anything to add to that, Sam?
It was my fault. All right, okay. your editing leaves a lot to be desired.
Mr. S. Worrell, a.k.a. Wazza, cheeky Aussie twat. Talk about backstabbing. Never rated Johns and he knows fuck all. So, didn't hang around. Now, we come on to the letters. We've had a lovely letter in this week from Jimmy. He says, thanks for the podcast, lads. I do look forward to it coming out weekly. I know the podcast's a bit shit. Thanks, Jimmy. But it's also a welcome listen, both prior to and during this shitty pandemic. It didn't go unnoticed that you mentioned Colwyn Bay in last week's broadcast. I'm a Wire fan living in North Wales and would really appreciate if you boys could put me in touch with any Wire fans who may live nearby. As in my formative years, having enjoyed many years studying the Fletcher Street End, funded by two paper rounds in Hood Lane, and Great Sankey. I know probably like other migrants struggle to find other like-minded people within the place I now reside. I would really appreciate if you boys could, on my behalf, appeal to any Wire fans in my local area, thus sharing the cost to travel back to Warrington on match days or sharing a pint whilst watching the game in my local. P.S. I live in Colwyn Bay. So anyone out there down in North Wales, get in touch with us, and we'll
happy
put you in
to say that Sam has already volunteered to go and pick him up.
That's no problem. Or what you could also do, send in a list of Wire players that signed from Rugby Union in Wales, and surely there'll be relatives around that area that will be like-minded.
We haven't done any police checks on Jimmy, and he did send another joke in after he sent this letter in. Please never get in touch with the podcast again, Jimmy. I can't get it out of my mind. And the last letter comes in from a lady, Debbie McGeed. She's written, Dear What Would Brian Bevan Say? I'd like to congratulate the podcast on last week's section regards the Barbie doll. And looking back through the history of time in relation to Barbie's vehicles and home caravan archives, it was refreshing to hear a rugby league podcast showing such diversity in topics. And it magically took me back to my childhood, as I too owned the 1971 country camper. So, isn't it? However, due to my uncle residing in West Germany, on my 8th birthday, I was sent the limited edition three-wheel motor vehicle you also mentioned in the podcast. All my friends were very envious because, as you correctly stated, the three-wheel motorbike wasn't available in the Warrington Argos catalogue. I'm pleased to say, in 1989, I went to Berlin to visit my uncle, only to discover that he too had driven a large vehicle during the war, although it was not a static caravan, but a panzer tank.
Oh, God.
Thankfully, my uncle didn't seem to show any battle scars or right-wing tendencies, and he was delighted by my gift to him of the Warrington rugby scarf, which he said he would add to his considerably large collection of flags and memorabilia, which he kept behind lock and key. Bizarrely, I never did get to see. Uncle Heinrich sadly died in 1984, but I'm pleased to say, in his will, he bequeathed to me his two pet hamsters, Eric Chirpy Chips von Meinstein and Whiskers Rommel. So, Dennis, can I add to that?
No, obviously, it's good we've expanded our listenership to Nazi Germany.
Sam, you're running your brow there a little bit. You okay? You all right?
Oh, I'm just waiting to see what's next.
Okay, that's it for another week. It's nearly time for the lockdown letters to end, but until the Rugby League returns, write to Sam, preferably by delivering your message in a similar fashion to Pheidippides did in his resilient run from Marathon to Athens to deliver the news to the Greeks. It was their year. Or if you couldn't give a shit, email to whatbevan@gmail.com, tweet to whatbevan, and if you're a keen contributor of typing grammatically incorrect messages on the Warrington RL forum, yes, for all you plebs, there's always Facebook. So with a packing up of his primrose and blue litmus paper before he dips his pipette jargie into his conical flask, it's a Bunsen-burning, flaming wave from Sam.
All the best.
And with the tightening of his belt around his hollow metal hole at the top of his insulated column, it's an electrical charge Van de Graaff generator's goodbye from Dennis.
Good seeing you.
I'm Rob London. I'm off to discover whether Charles Darwin's theory of evolutionary missing links turns out to be it was just the people who live in witness. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
You're talking rugby union for an hour. Jesus Christ.
I think we'll do it again next week.
Oh, don't bother. Don't fucking bother. The